The Pre-Med Year, session number 573. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Now, welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have an awesome guest, Vanessa, who is in a Canadian medical school. We don't feature enough Canadians here on the Pre-Med Years podcast, and guess what? We should. So if you are a fantastic Canadian who is navigating your pre-med journey or is in medical school, I don't know why you'd be listening to this, but when you get into medical school, if you are Canadian and you'd love to share your story here on the Pre-Med Years, reach out to me. You can apply to be on the show at medicalschoolhq.net/apply. Let's go ahead and jump in, say hello to Vanessa and hear about her journey to medical school. Vanessa, welcome to the Pre-Med Years. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you. We have a Canadian on the podcast, someone who is at a Canadian medical school. We don't spend enough times with our friends up north, but I'm excited to chat with you and your journey to medical school. The first question, though, is when did you first realize you wanted to be a doctor?
Ooh, that's a very good question. Honestly, I think when I was super young, I don't know why, around like 12 years old, I started to just really like dabble in medical field type, like that environment, because my aunt and I like used to watch like Untold Stories of the ER and all these shows. And like, I know they're not the most realistic, but I just fell in love with those stories. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like how quickly and how exciting, and the fast-paced environment, the stressful environment, like, and then the result of it all just really fascinated me. And so that was always in the back of my head. And then going through university, I was like, okay, I should pursue the sciences in case, and ended up like taking a different route. And then around like 15, 16 years old, I landed in like a few sports injuries myself. And that pushed me into the medical field even more, like exposure to that, where I had like knee surgeries, and then I interacted a lot with orthopedic surgeons, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. It just reminded me how much I love this field, and I went back to making sure I try to pursue that path.
Yeah. So you are from Canada. You went to school in Canada. You're in med school in Canada now. As you were going through that process, you go to undergrad in Canada. As far as I know, it's a very, very similar system to here in the US, where it's a high school to college and then on to med school, whereas most of the rest of the world is you go straight from high school to like a six-year medical school. But you go off to undergrad. Is there anything that you're doing different in undergrad because you are a pre-med student? What does that look like for you?
So I was actually... like the system in Quebec is a little bit different. I'm not sure if everyone knows this, but after you graduate high school, which ends in grade 11, you then go on to CEGEP, which is about 2 years to complete. My case was a little bit different and unique. I completed it in 3 years because I switched programs. I switched CEGEPs even. So it took me 3 years instead of two. And then after that, I went into doing an undergrad. I wasn't eligible to do pre-med. So that's like, in like here, we call it année préparatoire. So I wasn't eligible for that because you had to have a course, like a certain minimum R score, which I didn't have. And you also had to complete CEGEP in 2 years. So right away, I didn't even bother applying because I wasn't eligible.
Okay.
But then I did the undergrad, and I did an undergrad in biology, which took me about 3 years, and I completed it at Concordia University. And then I applied to medical schools. I didn't get accepted. And so I did a 2-year undergrad in kinesiology, and then I got accepted that way.
So you've done two undergrads to get in. So it's a very common thing. There are not a lot of medical schools in Canada, and there are more students applying. In Canada,
Again, for students who are listening who don't understand, a lot of the medical schools are considered like in-state, like we would call them here, but in province, like they have provincial, if that's the right word, preference, yes. Right, for residents of that province. And so there are a lot of Canadian students who want to come to the States to practice medicine and then potentially go back to Canada or maybe stay in the States. Did that ever cross your mind to come train here and then maybe go back to Canada or stay here?
Absolutely. Because you brought an amazing point of, I think there's like 10 medical schools or 12 medical schools across all of Canada.
Yeah.
And you can imagine how competitive it is to stay in Canada and try to get here, get into school here. So my first time applying, I wanted to really focus on trying to get into a school here in Montreal, in Quebec, where we actually, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but we don't require the MCAT if you're from Quebec. And I think like certain provinces outside of Quebec also don't require it. The MCAT if you're coming to Quebec, but the first time I applied, I didn't get in and I didn't take the MCAT. The second time I applied, I also didn't write the MCAT. I really wanted to give myself a running chance and say, okay, just put 100% or 1,000% maximal effort into applying to McGill, to University of Ottawa, which also doesn't require the MCAT. And then there's three other schools, in Quebec. So there's Université de Montréal, Université de Sherbrooke, and finally Université de Laval, where none of those require the MCAT. So those five schools total apply to all of those. The only school I got an interview at was McGill, and luckily I got accepted. So, but my path was really going to be, if I don't get accepted to any of these schools, then I need to write the MCAT. I need to then apply to schools all across Canada and then also look into applying to schools in the States, because it really is just that competitive. It's really not that easy. I was warned multiple times like that you're putting all your eggs in one basket. It's not a good idea. The chances of getting into McGill Medical School is like winning the lottery. Like, what are you thinking? You're crazy. And I was like, I'm just going to go for it and hope for the best.
There's not much difference, right, between that and students in the States and being told very similar things in terms of getting into med school. What do you think it was ultimately that helped you get one of those spots at McGill? How big is the class there at McGill?
It's, I believe, we're 204 students our year, and there's two campuses. There's one in Montreal and there's one in, it's called the Outaouais-Gatineau campus. But I think there's about like 40 or 50 students there, maybe even less.
Okay. So what do you think it was that helped you get in? You're finishing your second undergrad and you're putting all of your eggs in that basket.
I think the thing that really kind of like hit the home run for me was I really reflected on my first time applying and getting that first rejection and really analyzed my application to see what went wrong. And for McGill, at least, it separated what decides you getting an interview is based on three categories. It's your academics, so essentially your GPA or your R score, depending if you're coming. That's what we refer to the grades for CEGEP is R score. Mm-hmm. So there's the academics portion, which is worth 70%. There's CASPER, which is about 20%, and then CV is only 10%. And so I did feel like I had a competitive GPA, and I tried to look at each of those categories and put myself in the section of like, am I under competitive, competitive, or over competitive? And so when I realized I was sort of in the under / competitive category for academics, that's what made me decide, which was a question like friends of mine had, like, why did you go and do a second undergrad? Why not a master's and then later a PhD? And I just felt like academics was so important in McGill's eyes that maybe having at the time I had a GPA of 3.86 on 4.0, that was considered like under competitive / competitive.
That's crazy. A 3.86 is fantastic.
Thank you. But unfortunately, so McGill posts their stats every year. And so I realized that I was actually considered like a little bit below the competitive category for the average GPA that they were interviewing and then accepting.
By the way, I love how transparent they are about their process.
Yeah, they're when I'll never forget, I'm going on like a small tangent here. I'll never forget. I was in my first semester of biology in Concordia. And at this point I knew I wanted to go into medical school, and McGill was offering like a session about medical school and just like the requirements just to get you well introduced into what entails, what their application entails and the requirements. And one of the head advisors, like one of her opening statements for like talking about academics was like, if you don't have a 3.8 or 5 or something or like above that, don't bother.
It's so rough.
It's crazy because I do know people that actually did end up getting into medical school, and dentistry too is very difficult at McGill to get into because there's such limited spots. But I know people with like 3.5 GPAs out of 4.0 that got in. So, but then again, it made me think they have probably had these crazy CVs and that are like just something that I didn't have. So, just to go back to that. So I really reflected on what I was missing. So I was like, okay, I need to increase my GPA, which I did with kinesiology. For CV, I asked a lot of people to review it for me and give me pointers. And so I corrected not so much my entries of my CV, because at that point, you know, what are you adding from 1 year to the next? Mm-hmm. I added like some extracurricular activities, but I really worded the description of it to really try to sell myself as this amazing applicant, and also why I'm a great fit for their school and why I'm going to be a phenomenal physician and the life experiences that got me to that point. So I put a lot of thought into my CV. And then the last thing I did was the first time I wrote the Casper exam, I didn't study for it really. Mm-hmm. Which again is like falling into this idea of like myths and rumors. A huge myth I heard was you don't need to prepare for the Casper.
Let's talk about this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one, and I hear it a lot. And
yeah, I actually preach it, and we'll talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Good. So that's it. That's a huge thing. The Casper. So my first time, I didn't study for it really. I just read a few like the CanMets principles, and that was like my preparation. Mm-hmm. And at the time when I first applied, the scores weren't released. Like there was rankings for Casper, and then the year after they finally released rankings. So the previous year I had no idea, but I kind of told myself, you're definitely in the under competitive category because you didn't study for it. So let's just.
Oh, okay. So you don't have no data on if you did well or not.
The first time I had no idea because they never released those. But then the second time I wrote it, and then I did rank fourth quartile, but I also, that time I really studied heavily for it, came up with strategies.
Fourth meaning first.
Yes. Yeah,
so top quartile.
Yeah. So the fourth quartile actually means that you ranked 75%,
75 to 100
higher than the across Canada is what I understood.
Yeah. I rarely say those words out loud, but I don't know if we say it differently here. Whatever it is, you scored the best.
Right. Really confusing, but you don't want first quartile. It is not a good thing. It's not a good thing.
Yeah. So
you want fourth quartile. Because it means you're minimum in the 75th percentile and higher of in terms of rankings across Canada.
Yeah.
So if you're in the first quartile, it means that you scored 0 to 25% higher than other test takers across Canada. So it's not
correct. Yeah. So I'm just I'm just trying to see what. On English, not non-Canadian sites, if we say it different, but maybe we don't say it different. I just don't say it enough that it sounded weird to me at first.
Yeah, me too. First, I can't imagine like opening being like, yeah, I got first like no.
Yeah,
I'm sure that, but it's very clear on Casper. Like they'll show you, they do like a little circle wheel, and they'll. You want all those four wheels.
You want all of them. Yeah. So you want to be in the top percentile, right? 75th to 100th percentile. But you don't know what you did the previous year. So that's a big piece of it. So let's talk about the studying aspect, right? Because before we jumped on, we said, hey, let's talk about some myths. So one of those myths, as you call it, but I don't think it's a myth. Is the study aspect. So what I typically tell students, and I'm friends with Dr. Kelly Doerr, one of the creators of Casper, who we meet at conferences, and she's like, the data shows that students who study for it actually do worse than the students who do study for it. So I don't know if we can call it a myth when it's coming from the actual people making it. What I tell students is you have to understand what it is. You have to understand how you're being scored, because I think a lot of people, and now, and I don't know if preview is a thing in Canada, the AAMC preview test is a similar situational judgment test here in the States now that the AAMC does as kind of a competitor to CASPER, where preview is, it's all kind of a Likert scale where you like don't agree to fully agree or whatever in that scale of like five choices. And you are scored based on kind of agreeing with the people who score the test. And so it's faculty members and stuff. And they're like, okay, based on this question, it's like that one of the sample tests that they have is like, you are given an opportunity to go volunteer at this prestigious hospital, but it conflicts with one of your classes, right? A required class. And so like the first question is, will it help to go and ask the professor if there can be any alternative methods provided to, or like attendance provided? And it's like, do you agree that that's a good choice or not agree that it's a good choice? And you have to basically agree with the people that are scoring the test who are faculty members and stuff. And so preview is all about knowing the answer. I have to conform with what other people are going to say is the right thing to do here. Whereas CASPER, when you learn about what the test is and when you learn about how it's scored, it's all about you and your thought process. And the students who do poorly on it, whether they practice or not, the students who do poorly on it don't explain anything. They're just like, oh, I know the answer. I know the answer. I know the answer. Right? But all the points are earned with the thought process of the answer. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. So you studied for it. How did you study for CASPER?
Well, like now that you're saying it, I don't know so much. When I say study, like what I mean is prepare. Like, because when I prepared for it, like my version of preparing was like getting to know myself very well.
Yeah.
So I collected like a bunch of questions, which was like, what are your biggest strengths? What are your biggest weaknesses? What was a time that you failed? What was a time that made you really uncomfortable where you had to challenge an authority figure? Like all of these things, like that was my method of practicing, like trying to get to know myself better and just reminding myself that there's like, well, also I looked at like the CanMeds principles and I also thought to myself, do you guys use the CanMeds principles in the States?
No.
Okay. So those like are like McGill talks about them like all the time. And like for CASPER, like we, like it's just known, I guess in like the Canadian community that it's like CanMeds is very important to familiarize yourself with, because it's pretty much like what a medical expert is.
Got it.
Like the qualities of medical expert.
So we have, similar to this, we have what's known as the AAMC core competencies.
Okay.
So similar.
Very similar. Like the collaborator, communicator, being empathetic, being a good leader, being a professional, like all these things. So I just tried to be familiar with those, give examples where I felt I embodied those traits. And also just practicing like concisely, because that's something I think I struggled with a lot, at least for the first exam, is I was running out of time because I would leave a question blank because I was trying to really say what's in my head, but you don't have time to answer all three questions in 5 minutes and really go on this huge tangent about like everything you would do and all the possible scenarios. It's not possible. So, I definitely prepared myself to say you have to be concise. So I practice being concise.
Okay.
I practice getting my word across just in a very direct manner that was very thoughtful and meaningful too, and trying to explain, express as well. Like it's not just about proposing this short-term solution. What did I learn from this experience? And then how to actually prove that I learned from it, this is what I would do in the next time around.
Love
or
it.
This is how I would implement a long-term solution that actually shows that I learned from this experience and I'm ready to implement it.
Yeah. Awesome. I think we're on the same page with preparing mm-hmm. for CASPER in terms of understanding the test, definitely understanding yourself.
Yeah. I don't know about how you can. You're right. I don't think study is necessary. Yeah.
Well, there are test prep companies out there that sell very expensive CASPER test prep, and I'm like, it's a waste of money. Don't do it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's one big big thing that potentially you've learned along the way. And it's very interesting that McGill is that transparent. Number one, I love that they're transparent, but it's interesting that CASPER is weighted so heavily because, again, Dr. Kelly Doerr, one of the co-creators of CASPER from McMaster University in Canada, she says that they explicitly tell schools, do not use CASPER as a screening tool. But it sounds like that's exactly what McGill's doing. So that's very interesting.
I didn't know that at all. That is very interesting. And what is shocking is that the CASPER is worth more than the CV. That's something that was very, very surprising to me when I was applying. I don't know how much 20% is really valued that much compared to like academics and CV at the end of the game, because I do like call it like classmates of mine now, like they were telling me that they're very happy they got in, but they had second quartile on CASPER, for example, didn't have the best GPA. So I was thinking, okay, maybe like they say this on paper, but then if something from your CV really stands out, they're like, you know what, that's why when, you know, the admissions committee or even the stats that they provide, it's very intimidating when you see 3.9 or 3.86 or 3.92 and you're like, oh my God, especially for the international categories or out of province categories where you exactly said it very well there's just a certain quota to fulfill with a certain amount of spots that like allocated towards in province and then out of province and then finally international. I think there was one spot, international spot for McGill my year.
Wow.
So you can imagine how competitive that must have been to get. And I would take those stats with a grain of salt because there still are students that are in my class or the year above me that I've met or the year below me that I've met that felt outside of those recommendations or stats.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they're very successful in getting in.
Yeah. And that kind of goes to my whole philosophy, and you wouldn't know this, just from a US standpoint, we have a tool called the MSAR that gives what's the median MCAT score, what's the 25th percentile MCAT score, 10th percentile. And so many students look at that median number and go, okay, that's the number that I have to get into that school. And I'm like, says who, right? We don't know the full range of MCAT scores or GPAs that a med school is willing to accept. So McGill, in your case, right, they have very high averages, but what's a minimum that they'll accept, right? Maybe it's a 3.0. If there are all of these other things on a CV that they go, oh my gosh, we have to have this person. They've obviously struggled in their life, but they've proven in other places, and obviously they've have to prove academically in other places that they can handle the rigors of med school. So it's one of those things where it's like you can't. I tell students, don't self-select out of applying to a specific school if you think you're going to be a great fit at that school and there's going to be a reason why they want to interview you. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that was really well said. It's really like very unfortunate. I do like see people time and time again, like opting out because they just like they see the stats or they do have people telling them there's no way I could get accepted. I'm not a good candidate just based off of I don't have high enough grades or I don't have enough research. I don't have publications. And it's really unfortunate because I had like a very not so impressive CV, like really not that impressive. I don't have any publications. I think I'm just like a very typical candidate where I could very much show you don't need to have the most perfect GPA and the most perfect CV in order to get accepted into medical school.
Yeah. What are some of those other big myths that you encountered along the way that maybe slowed you down in your journey to med school?
Oh, taking on a ton of extracurriculars and like composing what I thought would be this impressive CV to get into medical school because I think that my grades like sacrificed a little bit and honestly, even like maybe my mental health at times. Is I was taking on a tremendous amount all at once, all for the purpose of trying to get the top grades and trying to have this impressive CV. And it's, I'm very, like, I don't regret anything because I got to where I am now, but I don't know if it was necessary to put like that much effort and that much stress on myself.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it's a very common thing. A lot of students, and especially I talk to a lot of entering college students when they enter university and they're like, okay, I'm going to start being a college student and I'm going to do all of these extracurriculars and I'm going to shadow and I'm going to get this job and this and that. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, wait a minute. I have a 2.0 GPA now, but look at all my hours. And I'm like, hey, your hours don't matter anymore, my friend. You have to get that GPA up. It's a very common thing. And unfortunately what happens is students will be like, well, I have all these activities. Are they going to overlook my GPA? Will they forgive my GPA because I have all these amazing activities? I'm like, everyone else has amazing activities too, with a better GPA.
Exactly. I think that's like another thing that made me realize I don't think, some people think, okay, let me stop at the, put aside the GPA. I think it's good enough. And anyways, I have this amazing CV, so who cares? And then they go on to doing a master's, but you're kind of stuck because, okay, that brings me to another myth, is doing exactly that, like getting stuck at saying, okay, my GPA is good enough. I have all of this. I have the CV that's super impressive. Let me add on something even more impressive, like a master's. Let me go even further and do a PhD. That's good. If I don't get in after my master's. And I think that to me is luckily a myth that I don't think I fell for, because good. I stopped at the 3.86. I said, you know what? There's something, I don't know if it's my CV, I don't know if it's my Casper or my grades, but there's something here that prevented me from getting an interview.
Yeah.
And I need to, and I can't risk it. I can't stop now and do a master's. Plus there's no point, because why would I do a master's in biology if I don't want to pursue it in a career anyways? So I stopped there.
Oh, you say that, but every other student out there is doing that because they're like, oh, this will be the thing.
Yeah, this is impressive. I'm going to do it. For sure, medical school is going to accept me with a master's.
Yeah.
So no, that's what I mean by they actually recognize it's okay to go and do a second degree. And in my case, what McGill did, which was phenomenal for me, is if you did 45 credits, so I was able to, first of all, I was able to finish my second degree in 2 years instead of three, because I was able to transfer credits from my first degree to my second degree. Good. And then what McGill did that was even more helpful, and I appreciate and is really helpful for students, is if you completed 45 credits within your first year, they would completely not erase, like they would recognize that you did a first degree. But when you apply to medical school, they would only consider the GPA of your second undergrad.
Nice.
Which that was huge. So if you're getting anything above, in my case, a 3.86, then already that plays to my benefit in it. And it did. I ended up getting a much better GPA, thankfully. And then I thought that was really what maybe got me in, is that the having the top quartile for Casper plus my higher GPA plus really re-editing my CV. That's what got me. And that's why I really want to drive home the message and emphasize, really take the time to ask around, reevaluate your case, and don't just follow the crowd, what everyone's doing. My friend went on to do a master's.
Yeah.
She was very interested in going to McGill Dentistry. She wanted to do a master's. She was very sure, like that was what was going to get her in, and she's still applying. And a part of me wishes like she continued to like follow potentially like raising her GPA and then pursuing that path again.
Yeah. It's a very common kind of knee-jerk response here in the States as well, is students don't get into med school, and so they assume more education is what will help. Mm-hmm. And so they go and they do what we call here an SMP, a special master's program for students who want to go to med school or PA school or some professional school, or they'll do a post-bac work, and these are expensive, $50,000 to do this stuff. And I'll talk to them. I'm like, well, what's your GPA? And they're like 3.9. I'm like, you don't need any more coursework. The goal of more coursework is to prove that you are academically able to handle medical school. your grades are not an issue. You don't need more courses. Let's look at all of these other things. And so it's just, I think it comes, as you mentioned, right, following the crowd. It comes from just this process is very complicated, and they just don't know where to get the right answers. And then it doesn't help that med schools are also part of this kind of educational complex where it's a business, right? And they make money by promoting these master's programs. Like, oh, I'm sorry you didn't get into our medical school, but you can spend $50,000 and come to our master's program. Yeah. So, and what year are you now at McGill?
I'm in my second year.
And how's it going so far?
It's been amazing. It's really, I'm in internal medicine right now, which has been really hard so far compared to every block I've been, we call them blocks in medical school, but at McGill at least. And I started off with like our like surgery block, and then it was like our family medicine, pediatric, neurology block. And then lastly, now we're in internal medicine. And this one for me is by far the hardest, definitely.
Yeah. When you look back on your journey, what is something you would change and go, oh, I would definitely never do that again?
Oh, it's hard to say, because when you're like, when everything you've done has led to like your success now, I think in the beginning I was maybe getting advice like from the wrong places and putting so much pressure on myself to write the MCAT and to write all these French exams and to hire tutors and to spend money on all these outside resources. And I really, really put a lot of pressure on myself, like to try to get like the highest grades possible and the best CV and the best Casper scores, everything like that. And I don't think it worked out for me the first time around. And it landed me in like a lot of stressful situations, a lot of tears sometimes, like it's normal to go through those moments where you're really hard on yourself and even like very down, because it's, I'm sure anyone can relate here in saying that it's something that you've probably been dreaming out for quite a long time, or even if it's new, it's still something that you really, really want. And the medical school application process is incredibly difficult. There's so much information being thrown your way, advice from many people, and it's really taxing, like just mentally, it's really hard. And so just like if I had to go back and just like tell my younger self, like really just don't be so hard on yourself, like it's all going to work out. But just try to filter out, focus on one goal. And maybe this is not the most common advice that people would give, but if you have a certain program, doesn't have to be medicine, but a certain program, a certain school in mind, I'd really give 110% to that. And then start thinking about like plan B later. I was thinking about plan 100%. B way too early.
Yeah, I'm a no plan B fan. Plan B, humans, psychology has shown plan B distracts from plan A. And people are like, oh, that's stupid. And I get so much anger when I say that. I'm like, I'm not saying be unrealistic. I'm saying don't have a plan B. And try to figure out as much as possible. And yeah, if you have a 1.0 GPA, you're probably never going to get into med school. So let's think about some other things. But sure. Yeah, that to me, that's not a plan B. That's just a complete change in course.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad to hear like other people think that too. But I would just say like, don't give yourself a plan B before you've even given yourself a chance. And I think that was my biggest mistake going into my first application process. I was already thinking about plan B's, like, oh, if I don't get in, I'll do this next. Yeah. And I started looking into already my backup options of, if I don't get into medical school, am I okay being a physiotherapist or being an athletic therapist after kinesiology, which is, brought me into like a very bad spiral of not giving, and unintentionally not realizing that I'm not giving 110% to what I'm doing right now. And just to be in the moment, focus on what you're doing, give it your all. And then when you don't succeed after one, two, maybe even three times, then you could start thinking about a potential plan B. And that plan B doesn't necessarily have to be giving up on your dream of going to medical school and becoming a physician, but it could be So, you know, Quebec didn't work for me. Now let's start looking outside of Quebec. And Canada didn't work. Let's start looking at the States.
Yeah. Love it. Earth didn't work. Let's start looking outside of Earth. Martian Medical School. Here I come. That's awesome. I love it. I love it. So, Vanessa, you're on TikTok, the med student next door. What can students, people listening, what can they expect when they go find your TikTok channel?
I often like try to do like a mix of just being realistic in terms of like what to expect for medical school. It's not going to be laughs and the most exciting time of your life. Like, yes, I do would admit to the fact that it really is once you do get into your first day, your orientation, it is the most exciting, fulfilling moment of your life. You feel like you've made it and it's everything you dreamed of and more. I will say that. But then of course there's moments as well where you feel like that typical imposter syndrome, like, why am I here? I don't deserve to be here. I'm not smart enough to be here. All of those feelings. And you're not alone in those feelings. And I've been able to cope well with classmates who are feeling that way too. And so I try to show both sides, that like the realistic side and also the amazing aspect where it's like, it really is everything you'll imagine and more. And then also just like light humor things related to med school, like just common things that you'll see, like once you're actually in the hospitals, like you hear like the hospital drama that's happening, for example, or it's like very like nonsense things, or like feuds between classmates, like just like joking around in that way. And yeah, and then once in a while, I try to answer like in the comment section or like direct messages asking for advice. And so I'll do like one-on-one direct comment answers either directly in the comment section or by video. And then I'll also share like med stats every year because they're not that easy to interpret sometimes, like the McGill med stats. So I try to like simplify and then also share like my personal journey whenever someone asks.
Awesome. Vanessa, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. There you have it. Again, Vanessa talking about her journey to medical school and what it took and all the stuff that she learned as a Canadian applicant to medical school, to go to a Canadian medical school. I was super surprised about Casper and how impactful it was with their admissions process. So hopefully you learned something today. If you are a Canadian applicant, I would love to hear from you. You can reach us at Medical School HQ anywhere on the social medias. You have a wonderful week. See you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.